High in the air. Brito back at the wall. Adios, Pelota!
That's the type of manager that I'd like to be, which is the same every day. They know what they're going to get. They're going to get energy. They're going to get accountability. They're going to get structure, and they're going to get support. And I'm going to bring those things to the dugout in the clubhouse regularly.
It takes hard work, and it takes humility, taking one step forward at a time, making one good baseball move after another. And I really feel like that's how we're going to get where we hope and intend to go.
You're listening to Bags and Brisby on Athletic Podcast Network.
Welcome to episode 148 of the Bags and Brisby podcast. I am Grant Brisby. I'm here with Andy Baggerly. Andy, I've been waiting for this one for a while. 148. What do you think of when you hear that number in relation to the Giants?
148. Boy, gosh. 148. I don't even have a guess.
Oh, wow. You just failed Final Jeopardy. I stumped the Jeopardy champion. Tim Lincecum pitches for a no-hitter.
Oh, okay.
That number, 148 pitches for a no-hitter. I love it and I hate it, but I love it. Like, it's just, it's so of its, like, it's never going to happen again. 148 pitches.
Yeah. Doesn't Edwin Jackson kind of say, hold my beer? Didn't he have he had 149 pitch no hitter. So, you know, and now he's an Olympian.
Is he on that team? Yeah, that's right. He's on there with Scott Kazmir. Oh gosh, that's going to be great theater.
Yeah, it is. It's, and Todd Frazier got some Frazier flav going on on that Olympic team. And hey, Jimmy Scherfey was on the qualifying team. He's not going to get a medal if the U.S. medals, because they don't give medals to the people on the qualifying team. But he did get victories as a Giant and a Dodger pitcher this season, which nobody can ever say they've done before. So that's not nothing.
Well, that's a gentle segue into actually talking about it. Look, we're recording this on Wednesday because I'm traveling we couldn't do Thursday, and I thought, boy, you know, we just did a podcast on Monday. Are we going to come back on Wednesday and have nothing to talk about? No, that wasn't a problem. I think we have stuff to talk about. The Giants lost a brutal bullpen game. Is it time to start cracking each other's heads open and feasting on the goo inside?
It really did remind me of opening day in a lot of ways. right up to the point where I pulled up my stat head list of times the Giants have hit four home runs in a game and lost, because I thought, gosh, when's the last time they did that? And then, that happened on opening day in Seattle. They hit four home runs in a loss. And, you know, that's why it stings. They did everything right. John Brebbia obviously gave back a little bit of the lead to make it too close for comfort. But, you know, Harleen Garcia was great in the seventh. He's been great for a long time now. Jake McGee thought, okay, he's coming off back-to-back, you know, appearances. He hasn't been really good on no rest in terms of his fastball. But, whoa, there he is throwing 96. He gets the two lefty hitters out he's supposed to. And they don't even have Max Muncy or Justin Turner to deal with in the ninth, because Alex Wood pelted both of them with pitches and both of them left with various contusions. So you got Tyler Rogers to handle really the two right-handed threats that were left, which was Chris Taylor, who had two homers and a double in that game, and then you knew there was Will Smith lingering on the bench. And it was just over so fast. Walk, walk, walk-off home run, and that's it. I mean, that's what made it so stunning, was just how fast it happened.
There were a lot of angry people on Twitter, imagine that. But specifically because once the kind of word got out that Gabe Kapler said, he didn't look right. Like, his warm-ups didn't look quite right. And people were like, well, at that point, you got to pull him. I don't think that was ever, like, a plan. I think, you know, once you're warming up before an inning as a manager, you can't say, oh, those looked awful, you know, bring in the next guy. Like, you have no time. And even after he walked to, that's when, okay, now you have to get someone up, but then boom, it's over. Like, there was, once Rogers is in, you're not looking at his warm-up pitches and deciding, oh, this isn't going to work. It's just, you're kind of doomed if it doesn't work.
Yeah, you are loaded in the car. The safety bar is down around your lap. The car is already moving on the track of the roller coaster. And now you notice that there's four loop-de-loops coming up. you can't ask off. You are on this roller coaster. Once Tyler Rogers takes them out in that game and starts throwing his warmups, if you don't think he looks right, you're stuck with him for three batters. And you could say that that's good. You could say that that's bad. You could have any number of opinions about that. But the two takes that I think are just, I mean, frankly, ignorant takes. One is, well, they should have pulled him because, I mean, they couldn't by rule. The second one was, why did they monkey around with what they've been doing all year and pitch McGee in the eighth and Rogers in the ninth instead of vice versa? And it's like, no, have you been watching this team all year? Rogers has 10 saves for a reason. They've been very consistent with how they've deployed those two guys. And McGee was going to get two lefty batters. And yeah, Rogers was going to have to go through Beatty, who's a lefty batter in the ninth. But their biggest threat looming on the bench was Will Smith, who's a right-handed hitter. And I know you can point out that Rogers has a slightly negative split this year, but you don't want Jake McGee facing the Dodgers' best right-handed hitter on their bench with the game on the line. And by the way, Mookie Betts was still on their bench too, even though I don't think he was available. So I don't think you can really fault anything that Gabe Kapler did in terms of how he deployed his bullpen. Even the people who were like, why was John Brebbia in that game? Well, they used six innings of bullpen the night before. And Kapler even said prior to the game that the bullpen situation was, you know, not ideal going into that game. So, it's sometimes you just have to say, hey, this is our leveraged reliever. He was used in the right spot. It didn't work out. He didn't have it. Just brush it off. We know those happen from time to time. Or you could look at it and say, this is a symptom of something the Giants need to fix. And, oh, hey, there's this trade deadline right around the corner. What a great time to fix it. And I think that you can be right on both counts. You can brush it off as a one-off that was really, really fluky. And you can also see it as a sign of something the Giants can definitely fix and get better at the trade deadline.
Listen, when you invest 3 hours at a normal game, not against the second place Dodgers, not against your rival, but you invest 3 hours only to lose it in the ninth inning, it's tough and it's easy to overreact. And last night, Giants fans, well, they weren't very happy. And so there were reactions on social media and such. What I look at and the way that I was able to step back is, yes, that was an awful, awful outing from Tyler Rogers. And it ballooned his ERA up to 2.05, which makes you think, gosh, you know what? He's been really, really, really good this year. Since the start of June up until he entered the game last night, he had a 1.10 ERA. Since the start of June, like, he was pitching well. He's been pitching well for the most part all year, except against the Dodgers. And maybe that's a thing or maybe it's not. But I do think that he's someone that deserved the trust going into last night and probably still deserves it, you know, even after last night.
Yeah, it's really stunning when you look at the one thing that jumped out to me, not just against the Dodgers, but at Dodger Stadium. He's made 9 career appearances at Dodger Stadium and he's given up 12 runs. And you take all of his other road appearances in every other ballpark besides Dodger Stadium, and he's given up 4 runs in 33 appearances. So it's just been Dodger Stadium for whatever reason. I don't know if they have a submarine batting practice machine in a tunnel underneath the stadium or something, or the hitting background, or maybe that there's something that the Dodgers have trained for, or some way that they're more comfortable against him, or it's just a small sample fluke. But either way, there's 2 games left at Dodger Stadium, and that's it for this season until there may be some postseason entanglement there. So I think that the sooner that Tyler Rogers can put this place in his rearview mirror, maybe the better. But clearly it's a place where he's going to have to flush it and learn to have some success, because the Giants are going to be back here a lot. And that's obviously been his kryptonite here, is pitching at Dodger Stadium.
I'm reading between the lines. You're suggesting that the Dodgers are banging on trash cans, aren't you?
It's the 72-mile-an-hour pitch coming. No, right. It's the 79-mile-an-hour pitch coming.
Oh, he's doing it. He's going to do that weird thing where he drops down.
Yep.
Watch out for it. He's going to do that weird move. Oh, but you bring up a good point. Like, all right, it's deadline time. And I spent a lot of time this week looking at starting pitching. I think I talked myself into the idea that starting pitching is where it's at. The Giants need a starter. And I was really not focusing on the bullpen. I thought, Rogers, McGee, Harlan Garcia has kind of reached a new level. You just get one more guy. Maybe it's Dominic Leon. Like, you know, I was kind of okay if they had like a core four in place. I think last night broke my brain, so I'm writing about it right now. I think one more reliever is a must, if only not to like prevent what might have happened, because you're not going to get Mariano Rivera in his prime who's going to be perfect, or Eric Gagne or something. There will still be blown saves. It's more a matter of pushing everyone back. Like, everyone gets a little bit, you know, it gives Gabe Kapler more room to play in different leverage situations. It gives the Giants depth. And you wrote last night, that's what they're goofy about. They're goofy about depth.
Yeah, I really did kind of recalibrate a little bit based on last night's game either. And not just because, hey, you know, it was a blown save, but I sort of had the same thought that you did. They need to go out and reinforce the starting rotation, and maybe they kill two birds with one Randy Johnson stone, as you wrote, and they can move a Sammy Long when he's healthy, or a Logan Webb even, or somebody else to the bullpen to strengthen it and give them, you know, another sort of long relief piece. But you know, the more I think about it, you really do make this bullpen better if you improve it from the back end. And it reminds me of something that Farhan Zaidi said at the winter meetings. I think it was before the 2020 season, after the Dodgers acquired Mookie Betts. And his point was basically, you know, you reach a stage as an organization where you have so much talent and you are so loaded that the only way you can make a meaningful improvement is to go out and get a megastar player, a Mookie Betts type player. And that's what the Dodgers did, because you could go get a sort of second tier star player, but is it really going to be better than smooshing together a Jock Peterson and a Chris Taylor in a platoon and the overall production you get out of that? Probably not. So, you know, you have to make a big, bold move to get better. And that's what you're always after as an organization, as a front office, is to make that roster better. And the Giants have gone out and they've spent about $7 million on their bullpen, and they've got one of the better bullpens in the National League. It's more valuable than the Dodgers in terms of win above average. They just DFA'd a guy, Jimmy Scherfe, that just was the winning pitcher for the Dodgers last night. The Dodgers picked him up. So that tells you where they are from a depth standpoint. You know, the Giants have gotten better as a bullpen, but they're at the stage where if they really want to improve on that, then they have to get the star reliever. They have to get the game-shortening type of reliever. And Aroldis Chapman's not available, but Craig Kimbrell is. Raisel Iglesias might be. Those guys are going to cost you a lot in terms of prospect timber. And how much they're going to be willing to give up for a relief pitcher, I don't know. And you know that they're going to have a lot of competition. A lot of other teams are going to want those relievers too. But for them to get better as a bullpen and to move everyone back a little bit and to get deeper, which we know that they value, hey, that you have a Craig Kimbrell you can rely on in the ninth. All of a sudden, you can use Tyler Rogers in the sixth or seventh or any pocket that you want to take, you know, use that bullet and take down a couple batters, because you know he can pitch whenever. You don't have to save him for save situations, et cetera. I think it makes this bullpen a lot better to have that kind of hammer in the ninth. But there's very few of those guys. They're going to cost you. Are they going to at all have an appetite to pay what it's going to take? That's kind of the operative question right now.
Yeah, I think it's a good point in that you can't just look at last night and think, oh, you know, what are you going to do about the Tyler Rogers problem? I mean, there is no Tyler Rogers problem. You're going to rely on Tyler Rogers no matter what. The Giants are going to be using him in high leverage situations unless it becomes untenable. So it's less about Tyler Rogers and more about, okay, John Brebbia. You know what I mean? Like, it's those runs, like pushing everything back a little bit and just eliminating the sketchier innings from relievers who are, you're a little bit less comfortable with in high leverage situations. And I'm looking at two headlines and two dates. And one headline from MLB.com is June 25th, 2020, John Brebbia undergoes Tommy John surgery. And now I'm looking at one from June 20th, 2021, less than a year later, John Brebbia back for Giants after Tommy John surgery. His recovery was like wildly fast. And that's great in one sense, but there's always like, you know, is he ready to go every day back-to-back games? Does he have command? I mean, I know that that's one of the last things to come back after Tommy John surgery is command. I've heard someone say that it's almost like pitching with someone else's arm for a while. You're still figuring it out. That's more what the Giants should be worried about, is just making sure that every appearance is by a reliever they can trust.
And that's why this team is where it is. You know, the back end of the bullpen, the end of the bench, you know, the sixth, seventh, and eighth spots in the lineup, the Giants have been better than most of the teams they've played at using the back half of their roster. And so, yeah, that's certainly something they've paid attention to, and I assume it's something they will pay attention to going forward. And the other point, you know, Alex Pavlovich made this point to me in the press box yesterday, and I thought it was a really good point. If they really do want to get in the postseason and try to navigate a few levels of that postseason, and some of the teams they're going to face here in the second half, whether it's the Padres, they got a lot of games left against the Padres, they're going to face the Mets and the Brewers still a lot, and those teams have a lot of really good pitching that is, can mow people down. But they're going to face lineups that are a lot tougher than what they've faced, you know, in a lot of the season thus far. The Astros are coming in soon. And it's one thing to have a back end of the bullpen that you can trust, you know, to subdue the Diamondbacks for six outs. It's another thing to take down, you know, the Padres for all the games they've got left against them, to say nothing of the teams that they might face in a postseason series. So, you know, I think this bullpen has done what it's supposed to do against, you know, some fairly bad teams. But the challenge is going to be ratcheted up, isn't it?
It is. And that makes me wonder, okay, so if you're going to get a reliever, if you're going to trade for a bullpen arm, are you, to me, it feels like it's almost binary. Like you're either getting the Craig Kimbrell, you know, or you're just giving up a lot for Richard Rodriguez, the guy. Like, you know, this is going to be your ninth inning guy. And you know that this is going to be, it's going to be brainless for Kapler. He's going to be able to put the closer in the ninth inning. He's going to be able to play with McGee and Rogers where he wants. It's either that or nothing, because I think if you kind of try and split the difference with, I don't know, Ian Kennedy, maybe even Russell Iglesias, it might not be as effective, and you're still going to be giving up prospects that you're not comfortable with. Is that too bleak?
No, I don't think so. I do think that you can make the case that, you know, any kind of move that they make for, you know, sort of a decent reliever is going to be, you know, not much more than a lateral move at this stage. You know, just getting back to the idea of, you know, they're good enough that for them to really improve in a meaningful way, they need to go get someone who can shorten a game. And you know, I remember when the Cubs got Aroldis Chapman in 2016, you know, they went for it. They gave up, you know, Gleyber Torres, and they're like, we want to win a World Series, and this is a guy who can basically turn a game from 27 outs into a 24-out proposition. And there's tremendous value in that. So I think that's the kind of reliever that, you know, it's not just ideal, but really the only kind of reliever that can make them significantly better. And you know, and maybe they'll decide, hey, it's better off that we use the prospects we're comfortable trading to get us help in the rotation. Who knows, maybe in another turn through the rotation, the need is even more glaring there for one reason or another. And we know that they need to start building a rotation for next season too, with everyone who's a free agent. So, you know, they may calibrate that the need is more important for them now and for the future to go get them starting pitching that they can rely on. But in the short term, I don't think there's any question the way that this team can get instantly better is by getting a game-shortening reliever.
Craig Kimbrell is going to be very, very popular at the trade deadline because he's pitching so well. I mean, I can never tell when a closer is on a Hall of Fame path, but it sure feels like he's closer than most closers get to a Hall of Fame path. He's 33 years old. He has one of the highest strikeout rates of his career. He has one of the lowest walk rates of his career right now. He has a 0.52 ERA, 60 strikeouts in 34 and two-thirds innings. He is dominant right now, but that just means that everyone's going to want him. So, did the Giants have to give up Bart? Do they have to give up Ramos? Did they have to give up Bart and Ramos and maybe Canario for a guy like Kimbrel? Like, what is the trade market going to be for this guy? Are teams going to have to come over the top to get him from the Cubs?
I mean, you know, it costs the Cubs Gleyber Torres. So I got to imagine that the really elite reliever is one of the few rental players. And Kimbrel's not a complete rental, right? Isn't he under contract for next year, I believe? I
think he has a $16 million team option that will probably be picked up.
So, you know, there is a potential for another year of club control there, albeit an expensive year of club control. But we've already established the Giants are spending $7 million total on their bullpen this year. You know, they've got a lot of payroll room, so that shouldn't be a problem if they really forecast Craig Kimbrell as a difference maker. And we know these guys are valued within the industry. I mean, the A's gave $10 million to Trevor Rosenthal. They didn't get anything out of him because he immediately got hurt. But, you know, the A's are not a team that spends a lot of money. And they went out and spent $10 million on a guy who could, you know, get saves and get three outs for them. On the other hand, we know how prospects are valued. You bring up Canario, you bring up Joey Bart. You know, what if I mention a guy like Will Wilson? It's going to cost you Will Wilson. You think, well, that's not so bad. He's probably at the back end of their top 10 prospects. You know, he's not a guy who, you know, you think of when you rattle off the names of the untouchables. Well, they also spent like $12 million to get Will Wilson from the Angels an offseason or two ago in that salary dump trade for Zach Cozart. So that tells you how the industry values a player like him and how the Giants value a player like him. So I think that there's two things. There's the cost of what they feel the prospects are worth, and that there's the opportunity cost of, okay, if we cross the bridge and we trade Joey Bart now, well, what does that mean? Are we giving up the opportunity to be able to use him to acquire later? And all of these balls are in the air, and I'd love to be a fly on the wall in Farhan Zaidi's home office or wherever they're conducting business and be a part of some of these conversations they're having, because I don't think there are any easy answers, no matter how smart you are.
All right. Well, you are the general manager of the Giants now. Congratulations.
Oh, thank you.
It is July 30th, and the deadline is ticking down. Tick, tick, tick. You have a minute left. You have offers from the Nationals for Max Scherzer. You have an offer from the Cubs for Craig Kimbrell. They involve the exact same players or something similar, where you can't do one deal without the other. You have to choose between Scherzer and Kimbrell. Which way are you going, general manager of the Giants?
I would take Kimbrell, and I would also take some leftover spider tack and stick him to Chris Bryant, maybe Andrew Chafin. You know, Kyle Hendricks can come too.
Sure.
I really am going to be interested to see what kind of match the Giants and Cubs might be able to make and what the Scott Harris dynamic could be, because, you know, that is an advantage for the Giants to have a guy who knows that Cub front office as well as Scott Harris does. So I will cede the title of general manager, as much as you bestow it on me, to Scott Harris, because I think I trust his ability to make a deal with the Cubs more than my own.
That's a good point. And first off, Andrew Chafin is off the table because he looks too Chicago. Like he is deep dish pizza on two legs right now, and you cannot take him out of Chicago. He just looks, he just plays the part too well. So, but it's a good fit in a lot of ways because they have a ton of what the Giants might be looking for. They have, if you're looking for obviously the shutdown relief, you've got Kimbrell. If you are looking for maybe more of a complimentary piece, you do have Chafin or someone like that. If you want to go all in for a pitcher under team control, you have Kyle Hendricks. I don't know how available he might be, but maybe that's where if you're going to dump, you know, half of your top 10 prospects, maybe you get a guy like Hendricks who's around for another year or two. You have even like Javi Baez probably isn't going to get traded. I don't think he would fit with the Giants, but you do have Chris Bryant who definitely would. That is the organization that might be the best fit.
I mean, you know, the white flag trade happened on the south side. Make it happen on the north side. And by the way, I just called up a picture of Andrew Chafin. And oh, my goodness, I think he just walked out of the Superfan sketch with George Wendt and all those guys. Yeah, that's he belongs in the bleachers at Soldier Field on a Chicago Bears Sunday.
He should be allowed to wear a tan trench coat out to the mound. Like a tan, like raincoat. You know what I mean? Like whenever I watch like a Cubs game, it seems like the whole crowd is those tan, like, I don't even know what you call them. I've seen them in games from the 80s when I watch like classic games, and I see them now. It's like standard Chicago apparel.
Yeah, yeah. Standing in line outside a Vienna Beef hot dog stand wearing your tan trench coat. It's just nothing more Chicago you can do.
I'm bummed because when I went to Chicago, I never tried an Italian beef. Are you an Italian beef guy?
Oh, I love Italian beef. Now there's a secret. There's a secret to an Italian beef sandwich. First, you have to make sure that they dunk it. They got to dunk the roll in the juice. The other thing is you got to make sure that it's got the giardiniera on it, the spicy pickle relish. Yeah. And if you're given a choice between sweet peppers and hot peppers, there's only one answer, and it's both. The answer is both. You put both of them on. And I'll give you my secret spot, because Al's is well known. You can go to a lot of Portillo's and you get a good beef sandwich there. A little on the oily side. But my spot is in Skokie, Illinois, on Dempster Road. It's called Herm's Palace. And if you ever find yourself in that little corner of Chicagoland, as they call it, you got to go to Skokie, Illinois, to Herm's Palace and order the beef. And you know what? Maybe get a Chicago dog on the side, too, because a hot dog can be a side dish.
I am looking at pictures of it right now. Not just, God, man, I need to go out there. That looks just incredible. And the ambiance on the outside, it looks just like a little hole in the wall. I'm just incredibly jealous that you have tried this.
I think it was about maybe 4 miles from the Northwestern campus when I was an undergrad, and if Uber and Lyft had existed back then, I probably would have been there every day, but I didn't have a car. So, but yeah, Herm's Palace is my spot, and I will go out of my way. I will fly into O'Hare for a series at Milwaukee just so I can rent a car, drive up I-94, get off on Dempster, and go hit my Herm's Palace on the way up to Milwaukee, and then probably hit it on the way back too. So, I will go out of my way to stop at Herm's Palace. So, shout out to everybody at Herm's. Keep doing what you're doing. You're making the country a better place.
Whenever I travel for work, I always just love to go on, you know, to figure out where is the one place I'm going to go. And when I went to Houston, I had like pho that was recommended because they have an incredible Vietnamese restaurant. It's like, I feel like I've done well for myself whenever I travel to New York and this. I have regrets. And my two biggest regrets are I didn't try an Italian beef when I was in Chicago. And now you've made me regret that even more. And the second is I never tried St. Louis pizza, just to kind of get an idea of what it's about, just so I could be a part of the conversation.
Yeah. I think if you actually did try the St. Louis pizza, you would probably recalibrate, and regret would be a word that you would use in maybe a different context.
I want to know Skyline Chili. I want to know St. Louis pizza. Oh, it can't be a part of the discourse.
You know, it really is. Like, God looked at the divisions when he made them and said, all right, I've got a city where they put French fries on the sandwich. That's great. Yes. Pittsburgh, you're in. Chicago, everything you do is delicious. You're in. All right, now we got to balance this out. So Skyline Chili, okay, we got to put that there. The place where they put Provel processed cheese on cracker bread with like sugary sweet sauce and call it pizza. Yeah, we'll put that in there too, and have a gooey butter cake for dessert. And by the way, even Ted Drew's frozen custard is overrated. If you've had Cop's frozen custard in Milwaukee, you'll know. But that's the other thing. You got Milwaukee's actually a pretty good food town. One of my favorite places is called Bavette the Butchery, and it's a really, really good spot in the downtown Milwaukee. And you can get some solid grub in Milwaukee, including an actual frozen custard that will have you dreaming of frozen custard for weeks and months.
All right. This is a bad decision to record this specific podcast around lunchtime, because oh, man. All right. You know, real quick, one of the things that I've noticed, I'm going to write about this. I'm writing about bullpen trade options today. There's just a really bad matchup when it comes to the bad teams, the teams that you know would sell if they had like dominant closers. The Orioles, the Marlins, the Royals, there just aren't, like, these teams are bereft. They don't even have like that one guy who has a wild strikeout to walk ratio. They don't, like, all of these teams, you just wish that they had one guy to poach, and most of them don't. That's probably going to mess the Giants up, right?
You've looked into this a little deeper than I have, but yeah, I think that's a great point. You know, those are the teams that are going to be most motivated to deal. And, you know, you've got Rodriguez with the Pirates, and he's probably the closest you come to finding a reliever like that. But he's not, as you mentioned, you know, the guy who's got, you know, 14 strikeouts per nine innings. What about James Karinchak with the Indians? I don't think the Indians are in a sell mode right now, but maybe if they lose eight in a row, they could be. But yeah, there's not too many of those guys out there. You're right.
When you have a guy and you say, oh, you know, he's got a good ERA or he's been a high leverage guy on this team, there's always like a wart. Like you go through the Cardinals bullpen, we've talked about them, we've seen them. They have just a ton of guys who walk the world. You go to the Indians and you have a guy like Brian Shaw, who's been there before, a veteran. He's walking the world right now. And it just seems like every reliever at this deadline has warts in a way that they usually don't. Like, it feels like there's more of an abundance in different years. So this year, I think it's going to be Rodgers with the Twins. I think it's going to be Rodriguez with the Pirates. Kimbrel, of course. Iglesias with the Angels. And that's about it. When you're talking lockdown, shutdown relievers that you feel good about, that you can trust, that once they're there, that you can start playing with McGee and Rodgers, it's like there's four, and there are going to be 12 teams. More than that after these guys. It's going to be a little bit of a bloodbath, I think.
Yeah, even the Mariners when Kendall Graveman was throwing so well. I mean, the Mariners are in it. You know, they're playing well and they haven't had this opportunity very much lately. So they're not going to punt it away. So, you know, it's always going to be fluid right up until the deadline, and I think that teams will, you know, there may even be some opportunities post deadline, especially guys who have some money owed to them. You can bet that the Giants are going to work overdrive to try to improve this roster. I do think that they sense that, you know, hey, these veterans have bought in, these guys have gotten to where they've gotten as a group. And I think that the Giants are going to be motivated to, you know, try to make that group better. And right now, especially in the aftermath of last night, I think it'd be pretty clear to say that the easiest thing they could do to make this team instantly better is to find that game shortening reliever if they can, because those guys are kind of unicorns.
Yeah, no, I still think Taylor Rodgers makes a lot of sense. And real quickly, because we're just about out of time, we've joked about the Twins hanging up on the Giants. That when you have a history of bad trades with a team, does the team care? Like, do the Twins care if it's the Giants that they're dealing with? Like, do they have a bad omen, or is it just like every trade is unique?
I get the feeling that they don't take it that personally, unless there's a situation where they feel like they've been given damaged goods, and there have been a few of those, you know, deals over the years. But yeah, I wouldn't think so. But, you know, yeah, I mean, maybe it makes you a little more wary. I do think that that's a little bit of a thing of the past, the whole notion of we have to win the trade, you know, to save our hides. And also, I think the other thing that's a thing of a past is, you know, we need to showcase this guy. And you know, I heard of some chatter when the Giants moved up Elliot Ramos from AA to AAA. Oh, you know, maybe they're just going to showcase him by letting him, you know, get a bunch of hits in a more hitter-friendly league. And, you know, I was told by someone in the organization, you know, this was totally a development decision. And, you know, let's give everybody else in baseball a little bit of credit. There aren't any front offices that are going to spit tobacco and basically say, well, you know, he hit a homer last night. Look, we need to get him. You know, they've got reports going back months and months and years and years, and they know who these players are. So, I think that I do think that maybe you're a little wary if you've gotten fleeced or feel like you've been fleeced by a team. But I think there's so much information out there that if you do get fleeced, you probably take the finger and you point it back at yourself and you realize, hey, we had the information to make a better deal and we didn't make it.
All right. This has been episode 148 of the Bags and Brisby podcast. We will be back next week and we're going to talk about probably trade deadline stuff. I think that this is just what we're going to be doing for the next couple weeks because it's so dang fascinating. But thanks for listening and we will see you then.